My name's Buffalo Bill and you're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance FM.
Has been done by Tor Hushoff's team here, but he's not placed in yet. Kirtipu has got second wheel, the champion of his country. He's on the left now. He's also picked up Tor Hushoff, who's got right in behind him. This is going to be a tough one. I don't think Bonan's going to get out of this mess, and I'm not sure where Robbie is yet. Robbie McEwen is about 5 men back. He's getting a perfect lead out as they start to switch. Bonan's got McEwen's wheel. A lot of dodging here, but what Tor Hushoff and Jan Kirtipu as they go on the left. Here comes Tom Bonan now in the centre. Challenged by McEwen. This is a desperate move again. And Bonan's got the head of the first with Shooter. Grady trying to break it. A little bit of a wobble. Bonan has done it again. And that is an incredible second. What a sprint that was. Everybody bouncing off everybody's shoulders. And I thought for a moment Shooter Grady was going to win it.
Well, this is Resonance 104.4 FM, and that is the unmistakable sound of the Tour de France entering its third week this week. And this is the unmistakable sound of the Bike Show, back for a new season, right the way through the summer for the next 6 weeks at a new improved time of 6:30 on a Monday evening. So hopefully some new people listening, and anybody who used to listen at lunchtime, well, just tune in 5 hours later and you'll find us here. Joining me in the studio for a look at the Tour de France today is Bike Show regular William Greswell. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jack. It's great to be back. It's great that you've got a rerun of a new series of the show.
And you're sporting some kind of retro jersey there. Do you want to care to describe that?
Well, it's a little classic Italian cycling jersey, which I picked up from a second-hand store not that long ago. I can't even read it. It's kind of I'm looking at it upside down here, but I'm sure it has some quite banal company sponsorship on the front. Italians will be laughing at me, I'm sure.
Some kind of cement manufacturer,
yeah,
or something
like that.
Oh, well, who cares? Anyway, we're going to be looking at the tour today with Guy Andrews, but also joining us from the Italian Alps by telephone, if everything works, is Kent Benson, who's been following the tour on the ground over the past week. And of course, if you're in London, one of the best places to watch the tour is Bar Italia on Frith Street. We were down there for the Giro d'Italia. And believe it or not, they get even more excited about the Tour de France than they do about the Giro d'Italia. So they've got a giant screen and commentary blaring at full volume, staying true to the Italian passion for road racing. And actually, there was a great, beautiful Condor bicycle hanging from the ceiling when I was in there last week. So I was down there with Guy Andrews, who's in charge of roadcyclinguk.com, one of the leading websites devoted to road cycling in the UK, and he's also author of The Rough Guide to Cycling in London. I started by asking him to give me a quick rundown of how the tour works.
Well, essentially you've got around about 19 teams, all with 9 riders. Essentially you've got one team leader and then 8 other guys who support that team leader. Obviously Lance Armstrong has a huge advantage with having the Discovery Channel team backing him, because they're all very, very good riders in their own right. You're basically looking to get the advantage for one guy within the team. So although it looks like a sort of an individual sport, it's actually a very, very technical and tactical team sport.
So today we've been roasting in London, and it's even hotter out in the Alps and in the Pyrenees. How do these people survive the day? It's five hours a day of riding. I mean, how much water are they drinking?
Quite a lot. I mean, we're looking at sort of 3 to 7 litres, depending on how hot it is.
And they carry that all on their bike?
Well, they'll carry quite a lot at the start. Sometimes 2 bottles on the bike, and then maybe 2 in their pockets. and then you'll see them through the day dropping back to the team cars to collect bottles. There's also official feeding zones as well where they can pick up bottles. But essentially there's only two or three guys that will do that for the day, whereas the rest of the riders will be able to sit in the peloton, take it easy whilst somebody else fetches and carries for them.
So it's like the junior riders who get given water fetching duty, is it? You don't get Lance going back there to get water for everybody.
No, absolutely not. They're called domestiques, which is a bit of an unfortunate name. I prefer the Italian term, which is a gregario. And basically these guys are just, you know, they're there to work for their team leader, and they work tirelessly for them. At this stage of the race, we're going now into the third week. It's a very, very hard war of attrition for a lot of the guys. You're finding guys are getting ill, you know, they may be carrying injuries. And on a hot day like today, it really does become a war of attrition.
Can you think of any other sporting contest that is as physically demanding as the Tour de France?
Well, no, not really. Certainly not one that goes on for so long. I mean, Chris Bourbon once said, it's funny, in the Tour de France, it's the only race that you actually do where halfway through you have to have your hair cut, which, you know, it is a very long, hard slog, and I think that is essentially why riders like Lance Armstrong are particularly good at it, because they have the mental capability to concentrate and exert themselves for that amount of time.
Because he doesn't seem to have bad days, does he?
He has had in the past, but no. And this year, he's stronger than ever. I mean, he said this is his last tour. I'm not so sure. I think he might come back again. He's already said that he's going to retire, but I think the incentive for him to come back again next year, because he's so dominant, will be quite intense.
And if people go out to France, what's the atmosphere like?
Well, it's an amazing event, because you do get so many people every day watching it. I mean, I think they estimate crowds of 1 million people a day watch the Tour de France actually on the road. And even more than that in some of the mountain stages. I mean, in Luz-Ardidienne 2 years ago, there were estimated 400,000 to 500,000 people on a 13-kilometre climb. So it's five deep all the way up, and it's an amazing atmosphere. And the event goes on all day. It's not just for the riders to come by. There's publicity caravan. There's entertainment. It's an amazing day. And obviously the French, they love a picnic. So it's all about, you know, the atmosphere and soaking it all up and waiting. It's the waiting that is just as exciting as the race itself. But it is the sport of the people.
It seems to be a really good advertising for the French countryside and the French national character. You see all the helicopter shots of the beautiful landscape, and then the, you know, television channels are devoting hours and hours and hours to covering the French countryside. It started as an advertising campaign, didn't it, somehow?
Yeah, it was started by a guy called Henri de Grange, who started it to actually promote his newspaper, which was called L'Auto originally. So it was basically a way of taking his publication to the people and distributing it directly, almost.
So was that?
Well, obviously that was at the beginning of the century, so we're going back a long, long time now. And now we're looking at a race which is, you know, it's almost like a moving town. I mean, the amount of emphasis that's placed upon it and the amount of money that's involved sponsorship-wise just in the one race is pretty incredible. But essentially, it was basically a publicity caravan. That was what it was designed for. And it's only in recent years, really, that trade teams have been allowed. Initially, it was individuals and then national teams. But now it's a massive professional sport, and those professional teams obviously pay a lot of money to get into the race.
And so looking ahead to the final few stages of the Tour de France, what should people be looking out for?
Well, on Tuesday, the big stage is obviously from Marengs to Pau, which was the Étape stage, the Étape du Tour stage.
That's the amateur race.
Exactly, the amateur race where 7,000 to 8,000 people get the chance to ride a stage of the Tour de France, and that was Marengs to Pau. And that was a very hilly, hard stage, going over the Col d'Orbisque, the Murray Blanc, and the Col de Cher. And that should be a very good race. It's close to Spain, so expect some of the Basque riders, Iban Mayo perhaps, to have a good go. I think it will be a very exciting stage, because it really does encourage people to attack. They certainly won't be staying together for that stage.
Well, that was Guy Andrews joining me in Bar Italia last Friday, watching the stage of the Tour de France on that day, and every day you can go down there and watch it. And another place you can go and watch the Tour de France, at least for Tuesday, which is tomorrow, is down in the Offside Gallery in Islington, where Rafa, which is a new clothing company selling specifically made bike clothing, based in London, they're going to be launching a new magazine called Rouleur, and publicising their range of clothing at an all-day Tour de France watching party from 12 noon until 10 o'clock at night. And that's at the Offside Gallery, 271 to 273 City Road, Islington. And as well as articles by the likes of Graham Fife and Matt Seaton in the new magazine that's being launched, there is an article by me about Kraftwerk and their connection with cycling, so I thought I'd give that a plug. Anyway, William, you're here in the studio armed with Ekip. What's the latest gossip on what's going on in the tour? What's your take on this year's tour?
I've been trying to buy Ekip every day at this tour, just to get into the habit of it, really, and get a real feel for what the locals are kind of how they're responding to the race. But from my own perspective, it'd be interesting to hear your viewpoint as well. I mean, just thinking about the entertainment values or whatever of this event, which is essentially, you know, it's a big show. It's a big, you know, one of the biggest shows in France. I mean, what have we had? You know, suspense. Well, not really. I mean, from day one, the writing's pretty much been on the wall, in my opinion, with Lance looking pretty dominant, as Guy was talking about there as well. But, I mean, we've had excitement, we've had emotion in sort of short, intense spurts. I think yesterday was a brilliant example of that with George Hincapie, you know, loyal lieutenant to Lance, and a domestique in the Motorola, Postal, and now the Discovery team for something like 9 years, and he finally wins a stage. And he, you know, he's a sprinter, and he wins at the top of one of the biggest mountain stages.
Well, he wasn't expecting to win at all. He was told to go out with an early breakaway to mark the leading group, so that if Lance wanted to catch up, he'd be able to give him a hand doing that. And then suddenly they've got a 15-minute time gap, and apparently the Discovery team managers just said, okay, you're on your own. You're not a domestique anymore. Go for it.
Yeah, that's right. Johan Bruneel, when it came over the earpiece and said, go, George, it's yours. They were, I think it was 18, 20 minutes ahead. So it's worth them doing. It's actually a very interesting quote about that in Ekip, because Oscar Pereira, who's a Spanish phone app rider, was in the breakaway group. And at the end, he claimed the moral high ground, because he said that basically George hadn't done any of the work in the group, because he was basically trying to slow the group down. He said, when I got to the final kilometre, I was there with Hincapie, but Hincapie just stuck behind me. I just lost my morale. Sportingly, by the rules, it was his victory, but it doesn't mean anything at an ethical level. He actually says... J'estime que le vainqueur moral c'est moi. I was the moral victor of that stage.
Well, that's not very graceful, is it?
Well, you know, he's kind of got a point in a way. I mean, I know it all comes down to team tactics and everything, but, you know, if you watched the stage yesterday, George was pretty happy just to sit on everyone's back wheel. And once he got the go-ahead from Johan Bruneel, it was like, well, every man for himself, so he just looked after number one.
It's interesting, this subject of Lance being an American and being so totally dominant in the French national sporting event, and with relations between the US and France being a little bit strained over the last few years, how well have the French coped with Lance, and do they appreciate him, or do they just respect him, or do they love him?
I think it's kind of a, you know, I think there's a lot of respect, but I don't think there's an awful lot of love, to be honest. I mean, you know, they've always said that Lance doesn't make the biggest effort in terms of speaking French to French reporters. He does speak a bit and speaks in French when he can, but you know, he's a man who has an entourage which protects him from everyone and from any risk which could detract from him winning the tour, and perhaps him and his team feel a bit distant from the fans, really, and from the people who want to see the tour for the entertainment. And you do wonder sometimes if he's built too much of a barrier between him and the locals.
I mean, I think you said that there's not much excitement in this tour, and that's, you know, partly because of the state of cycling, but I think a lot of it has been down to bad luck. Tom Boonen getting an injury has made the green jersey battle, you know, less in some ways. Well, in some ways more interesting, but in some ways, you know, he's a big contender and he's out. Valverde's out with tendonitis and he's a potential challenger. Lance has described him as the future of cycling. Yeah. He beat Lance, didn't he, on that mountaintop?
That's right, yeah, he did up at Courchevel. But, you know, it'll sound really pat, but you do make your own luck. And you look at someone like Ivan Basso, who hasn't been unlucky particularly in this tour. He's had a few punctures at crucial moments. But, you know, they were talking a lot yesterday about saying, well, his team insisted that he rode the Giro d'Italia. If he hadn't ridden it, you know, the form he was showing in the Pyrenees yesterday and the day before, he could have broken away and really made a bigger impact on Lance if he'd been a bit fresher. I mean, we'll never really know, but, you know, you do make your own luck. Jan Ulrich, well, he hasn't been that unlucky in this tour. He had one little crash. I guess he was unlucky in the week before.
He went through the windscreen of a car that he was following.
But these are the risks that all these riders run. And, you know, Lance had a crash, you know, 10 days before the tour as well. So, you know, he's had his fair share of bad luck too.
Well, let's see if we can find some more excitement from the roadside in the Alps. We're going to try and call up Kent Benson, who's in Italy. And while we do that, here is a piece of music.
Je vous parle en direct de cette 17e étape du Tour de France. Le peloton, énorme machine de muscles et d'acier, vient de s'élancer. Montez en danseuse, appuyez sur la pédale, surveillez son braquet. Que d'épreuves pour ces jeunes hommes qui, en attendant l'auréole de la victoire, se contentent de celle de la sueur qui laisse dans son sillage ce trait de musc que connaissent bien les supporters massés le long des routes. Pédalage et défonçage sont les mamelles du Tour de France, alors ils se défoncent car la ligne est encore loin. Alors que le peloton n'est plus qu'un souvenir, le glas des premiers abandons résonne dans la montagne. Face à l'effort, ceux qui ont le coup de pédale moins rageur donnent l'impression de reculer, de s'effacer, de disparaître.
Well, Kent, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Jack.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to the bike show.
Thanks.
And how are things out in Italy? Are you out in Italy now?
We are, yes. We're up in a small village just south of Sestriere, which is a quite well-known ski resort. And basically about an hour and a half drive from Brianson, where we had a finish stage and then the start stage the following day.
And you run a business out there that takes people to go and see the tour and don't go cycling around the Alps, is that right?
Essentially, yes. I mean, where we're based, we're sort of perfectly located for most of the Alpine climbs, everything from sort of Col di Zuard, Col della Scala, Col della Telegraph, you name it, anything in the Alps is almost, you know, is within reach from us. So it's quite a good location for that sort of point of view.
And how has this tour been?
Say again?
How have you found this tour? Has it provided all the excitement that you've been looking for?
Yeah, this tour's quite interesting, actually. I mean, at first it looked as if Armstrong sort of was holding the fort. But after yesterday's stage with Ivan Basso, he's quietly coming up behind and sort of giving Lance a run for his money. I think it's going to make quite an exciting
finish. But Ivan Basso is going to have to take a lot of time off Lance if he's going to survive the final time trial, isn't he? Because he's not a great time trialer, Basso.
He performed pretty well in the Giro on the time trial stages there. In fact, he won the time trial stage outside of Turin. And I think it's something he's been working on because he's now looking. The local papers are basically saying that he's booked his place as the tour winner after Lance. But I think he's working on that, and he should prove to be pretty good in the time trial coming up.
And so, what's it like actually to be out there on the roads watching it all happening?
Well, watching it on the roads is always quite exciting. I mean, anybody that's sort of passionate about the tour, just being on the same roads as some of these riders is one thing. But when they come through, you just realise how much a different level these pro cyclists are. I mean, you know, you're out there riding up and down the hills, you struggle up some of the cols, and these guys bounce over them as if they're not there. And you really just have so much respect for it. But the atmosphere is just like one great big party. It's fantastic.
And so the people who come over from England, is it just from England and UK? Or
No, I mean, we've had clients come over from Hawaii and Canada. And we've got some people coming over from Sweden for a holiday in about 2 weeks' time. So, no, it's generally sort of all over the place.
And so what's the kind of typical day like for them on their holiday? They're over there for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, normally over for about a week. I mean, we can run trips that are longer, but essentially what happens is we plan a routine that will suit their cycling ability. You're looking at a typical day, say for an average group, of about 60 to 100-mile ride. And depending on what they're looking for, we can throw in some of the great climbs or flat stages or, you know, you name it. But it generally involves lots of sort of riding, looking at the scenery, cafe stops, enjoying themselves, because we have to remember that they are on holiday.
Yeah, so if people want to find out more about how to get in touch with you to come out and watch the tour next year, or the Giro even, or just to go cycling, how do they do that?
Right, they can check us out on our website, which is www.ifhannibalhad.com. All our details are on there. Not wanting to be biased, perhaps because I'm based in Italy, but I would say that the Giro is probably a much more entertaining race than the Tour. The Tour is very much sort of, to a certain extent, almost preordained by the top 10. Whereas the Giro, because the ride, I don't know whether it's just Italian flair or perhaps they just take a few more risks, there's a lot more sort of excitement going on in the Giro.
And there's just as much excitement on the side of the roads for the Giro, is there?
Oh, absolutely. If not more, because the Italians tend to have a certain flair and panache about sort of entertaining.
And they wear the pink jersey when they're in the lead, rather than the yellow jersey.
That's right, yeah, the pink jersey, and then it's a green jersey for the mountain climber. And the colours are different because the sponsors are different, basically the historical difference. But both races now, especially with the new rules, the new UCI rules, making sure that all the main teams have to enter all the three big tours, has certainly pushed the Giro d'Italia up a notch. And this year was just the first of it, and I think next year is going to be even better.
Well, thanks for joining us. And I'll let you get back to whatever you've got planned for this evening. Are you out on a ride, or is it probably a bit late by now?
I'm actually just like the tour today. I'm on a rest day. We had a bunch over last week doing the actual sort of riding out to the tour and stuff. This week I've got a rest week where we're actually restoring our house, and then I'm back out to work on the bike properly next week again.
Okay, well, hope to call in again at some point in the future.
Fantastic.
And thanks very much for joining us on the Bike Show.
No problem. Thanks. You call Jack.
Bye, Kent.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, that was Kent Benson of If Hannibal Had, the bicycle specialist holiday company based out in Chambons, Italy. And back to Guy Andrews down in Bar Italia. I asked him to explain what all the different jerseys were. We all know about what the yellow jersey is. That's the rider in the Tour de France who gets to Paris first, who's got the lowest time as they go from stage to stage, as the race leader. But it's not just about the yellow jersey, as Guy explained.
We've got the green jersey, which is the points jersey, and points are given on intermediate sprints during the day, and they usually come sort of 60k into the race, maybe another one 120k, and then obviously the sprint at the finish, where points are awarded on the line, and then for usually the first 10.
What kind of riders will compete for the green jersey?
Usually it would be the larger riders, you know, the sprinters basically.
These are the guys who kind of hang around at the back until the last, you know, 500 metres, then sprint to the front and break for the line, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you rarely see these guys on their own in the mountains. Well, if you do, they're at the back, put it that way. But you're looking at riders who are 75 kilos plus and usually 6 foot plus. Having said that, this year there's two or three riders who are a lot smaller than that. Stuart O'Grady, for example, is a good climber as well as being a really good sprinter. And Robbie McEwen, who's quite a small rider, quite a diminutive rider, but he really packs a powerful punch. And that's what these guys rely on. You know, they don't rely on long breakaways. They rely specifically on exploiting the other riders and jumping around them at the last minute.
So they hang out in the slipstream of either the other riders or their teammates, is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, in the slipstream you save 20% of your energy. So basically you can roll along at 50Ks without exerting a huge amount of energy. And then these guys can accelerate up to sort of almost up to 60, 65 kilometres an hour at the drop of a hat. And they really do go when they go. There's other riders as well. Magnus Baxter, for example, this year is sprinting well. I hope he wins a stage before the tour is over, because I know that's what he went to the Tour to do. And Magnus is quite unusual this year. He's you know, he's 6 foot four. He's a big fella, you know, but he still climbs well. You know, some of these guys are still pretty good in the mountains, even though, you know, say they're over 75 kilos.
And so the king of the mountains is this white jersey with red spots on it.
Yeah, it's not the prettiest of jerseys, it has to be said, although obviously some people have an affiliation with it. The French particularly like it because the French riders have done so well in that competition in the past, notably in recent years with Richard Virenc. This year, a really good rider and a rider who could potentially challenge the overall in the future, a guy called Michael Rasmussen, who's actually an ex-world mountain bike champion. And this guy can really ride up and down hills fast. And he's shown that by winning stage 10 of this Tour and securing, I'm pretty certain he'll secure the polka dot jersey now until the finish, having gathered a lot of points. Again, it's like the points competition where the points are given the first across each mountain pass. And again, they'll pop out at the last minute and pinch those points. But when I say pop out, they're looking at a 10% climb or maybe even steeper. So to do that, you have to be 62 kilos and less. Some of these guys are very, very small.
So these are the mountain goats, the kind of wiry little men.
Absolutely. I mean, famously, recent years, Marco Pantani, the late Marco Pantani, who won in 99, he was a very, very small rider and well down in the 50 kilo mark, but still could time trial and obviously won the Tour, so, you know, he was no slouch.
And then there's the young rider competition as well, isn't there?
Yeah, the white jersey, which is for the under 23s, give them a chance. You know, obviously it encourages them to finish, because for younger riders it's obviously harder for them to finish. They don't have the strength that the older riders have. And that is usually a very, very closely contested race, because they all want to impress their teams.
Well, that was Guy Andrews explaining the difference between all the jerseys. And it's almost the end of the show. William, you've got one final piece of knowledge.
One more quote for you. Including some classic general knowledge. So if any of those cyclists out there want to know what the French is for bonking,
that's when you run out of all fuel in your body
when you
and you feel terrible.
Run out of energy. It's describing Jan Ulrich. Jan a eu une fringale. So if you want to say you've bonked out, then you say j'ai eu une fringale.
Well, I'm going to be cycling 120 miles on the Dunwich Dynamo from 9 p.m. next weekend on Saturday night. Hope any bike show listeners will come along and say hello. It's meeting at 9 o'clock at the pub on the park in London Fields, and cycling 120 miles to the beach in Dunwich, arriving at about 6 or 7 or 8 in the morning, depending on how fast you go. And I hope to see you there. From this week's edition of the bike show, it's chapeau.
De la plus grande virée, c'est la couleur du premier, par conséquent ma préférée. Happy au comptoir, je me lasserai de croire que l'alcool dans l'espoir d'oublier mes déboires. Le contre-la-montre est ma spécialité, car à une heure tout est fermé. Je continue donc sur ma lancée, mais dans mon col, dans la montée, je continue donc sur ma lancée, où je finirai dans le fossé. Au coucher du soleil, non, rien ne me résiste. Je suis le maillot jaune de la piste. Quand notre sommeil et se désiste, finir ce derrière et repartir en piste. La cloche sonne, la dernière tournée. Dans le peloton, on reste groupé. Pour réussir, y a pas de secret. À l'apéro, on est dopé. Pour réussir, y a pas de secret. Les tilos testés, les traqués. Happy au comptoir, je me lasserai de croire que l'alcool, dans l'espoir d'oublier mes déboires. Le casse par peinte est disputé. J'engrange les gourdes sans m'arrêter. Faut éviter d'être le dernier, sinon c'est la voiture balai. Faut éviter d'être le dernier et remettre ça à chaque soirée.
Hey,
It's still a long way to go.
It is long and interminable, the 1,000 metres at the top of a mountain like this. There are 300 metres to go. Oscar Pereira opens up the gap, but Hincapie's ready.
Hincapie goes at 200, and now there'll be no answer for Pereiro. This is going to be yet another memorable moment in the life of this American team. Lance Armstrong, when he can't win, why not send up George Hincapie to finish off a perfect day of tactical copybook reading? And George Hincapie, after 10 years in the Tour de France, finally gets a victory, and he cannot believe it. George Hincapie, Tour de France stage winner, Plaid d'Ailes 2005.